Ghetto Boys is back and reloaded. All in your mouth, yeah, now deep throated. This is for the streets, the real, the railroaded, the disenfranchised, the truth, the scapegoated.
And they know it, we speak the truth, so they quote it, cause we wrote it. The north, south, the east coast, it's the GB knocking, we keeping your head bobbing. It ain't no stopping.
And once the beat drops in, violins, the system is so corrupt, they throw the rock out their hands and then blame it on us. It's GB, don't get it twisted. On code and we ain't dancing for no buttermilk biscuits.
It's Willie D, y'all. Scarface in the building. Collectively, we are the Ghetto Boys, reloaded with another episode of information and instructions to help you get through this crazy, wild, beautiful world. Our guest today, Mike Epps.
What's up, Big Willie D?
Hey, King, how you doing?
Man, good to see you, brother.
All right, so we got some house cleaning to do real quick. So Scarface is in the building, but he's having some issues right now.
Brother,
so
Scarface.
But he'll join us momentarily. Now, man, you're back in your element. You're back on stage.
Back on stage.
Doing what you do.
Yeah.
How I feel?
It feel pretty good. You know, I guess because of the pandemic,
right?
The people are so receptive to everything. They like they so excited to be out. So, you know, we had a show over at the Toyota Center last night, man, and the people were just, man, I mean, they was laughing at some stuff. I'm like, damn, I know that wasn't funny. You know what I mean? I know when my jokes ain't funny, and they was laughing at some of that shit.
Yeah. Now, speaking of funny, so you got this movie with the Deion Taylor movie, right?
Deion Taylor.
The House Next Door. Is Cat Williams in that movie, right?
Cat Williams is in the movie.
Okay.
Shout out to Deion Taylor out there, black filmmaker.
Absolutely. Yeah. Deion is a real good dude, man. He's doing some great things. And you guys, this is your second time working together.
This is
y'all did Meet the Black.
Yeah, we did Meet the Blacks. And then this is actually the second installment of that movie.
Right.
This is like what would you say? Now, that was the prequel to House Next Door, because the original script was called House Next Door.
Okay.
But Deion, we decided to call it Meet the Blacks so that we could do a second one called House Next Door.
Right.
So he had all of this planned, you know what I mean, which he did. I think he did a great job.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, recently, Cat Williams was in the news. He was talking about cancel culture, right?
Yeah.
And he basically said that cancel culture, you know, it's non-existent. He said that, you know, you're allowed to say whatever it is that you want to say, and people are allowed to not like whatever it is that you have to say.
That's right.
And so if you can't take that, if you can't, you know, these words that you have,
yeah,
nobody takes these words away from you. You can choose to use these
They're
words
yours.
Or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What you think? I mean, do you think, D, that they using that as a control tactic?
No, I, you know what? I really do believe, yes, some people are, absolutely.
Like, to be able to tell you that, oh, this is sensitive if you talk about this.
Yeah.
And you're somebody that has a voice.
Yeah.
It's a control tactic.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a control tactic for many people, but also for some people, you know, I think it's a teachable moment because to Cat Williams' point, for a long time, you know, this whole cancel culture thing has been rooted in minority culture, really.
Mm.
Generally, it's minorities who subject to insults and slurs, right?
Mm.
And so now, insults and slurs from people of privilege and power, right?
Mm.
So now it's like
class.
People are saying, "Yo, it's time out for that.
Yeah.
We're gonna check you. You know, if you get out, of pocket, you're gonna get checked,
and it's gonna
cost you a check."
Mm.
So I think it has some validity to it, you know, because. For instance, I used to use, you know, and I think I can say this word right now because of the context in which I'm saying it, but I used to say the word retarded like it was nothing. You know, we all said it, right?
We did.
You know,
growing
that's
up,
growing
you know,
up, right?
Was,
well,
yeah.
Anytime somebody say do something crazy, well, then you retarded, right? Well, I was talking to a friend of mine one day, and she said, you know, you're not supposed to use that. You shouldn't use that word, you know? Well, it's offensive to people, you know? And you have to think about that. You're like, I don't mind being offensive to people who I don't like and people that I got something against.
Right.
But if somebody ain't did nothing to me and they say, you know what? A group of people say, look, man, we don't like that word. That's offensive to us. I know you don't understand it, but to us, it's offensive.
Yeah.
I don't have to use it. It's not that important for me to use that
word.
To use
it no more. Yeah. Because you already know that it hurts people.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Right.
And this is why I think people have to even understand what they have to understand about the N-word. It doesn't matter that you grew up using the word.
Uh-huh.
You know, it doesn't matter that, that people around you have used it and you've heard the word all your life.
You gotta learn how to.
It's offensive to millions and millions of people.
It is, man.
And
it
so,
is.
Why you wanna say the word so damn bad?
I know.
It. You don't get anything out of the word except, I guess, your. I guess you might get a little pride out of it. I mean.
I think
perhaps.
It's like segue words that we use in the hood. We don't even know we're using them, right?
I I grew up in the house with an uncle that was slow. That was what do they call it, man?
He was
well, when we were growing up, bro,
artistic.
that was the word that we. That's not artistic. It's worse than that. No, but it's and that was the word that we used to describe my uncle ever since I was, 2 years old. He's retarded. That's my uncle.
That's
yeah, for real. And we didn't see any harm in it. And then, like I say, like Will said, when we got older, we realized that it was a derogatory term towards someone who was not mentally advanced.
It was a description of ignorance
or
something, right?
Or something, you know what I mean? Oh, man, shut your retarded ass up.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's offensive. It's like saying, shut your nigga ass up now.
Mm.
You know, shut your Chinaman ass up now.
Why do we get prosecuted as a culture? I mean, this is what we say to each other. And we've been saying it. I mean, it's all broken English anyway. It's all a bunch of rhetoric anyway, words that, I mean, everybody been trying to figure out where that word came from forever. I done heard about 9 different terminologies of where the N-word came from.
I know where it came from.
Niggas.
Niggas.
Is that in Africa?
No.
They said they got a country, and they said they got a spot in Africa called
Niggas.
Niggas.
I seen that in the spelling bee, but it could have came from Niger, N-I-G-E-R, the Niger River, the Black River, or whatever. But I know it was an old mean ass.
But where did the white man find?
Pale faced white boy start calling us niggas.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. How did he come up with it as something disrespectful?
I mean,
he came up with it some kind of way, didn't he?
It's a lot of things that are said by those different people that don't like different people.
Yeah.
That, that's the most offensive thing you can say about me, then go ahead, call me a nigga.
Mm.
But man, if I run through my motherfucking dictionary of shit that I can call you. I didn't mean to say MFing, but excuse me. But I'm just saying it's kind of like playing the dozens now.
Yeah.
Call me nigga.
But don't every race inside of the race have racism against each other? I think Jews call each other words. Italians probably call each other.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But that
inside
that,
of the family,
within their culture. The problem, I think, the thing that's problematic about the N-word is that it was a word that was used to break us down, to destroy us, to demean us.
Right.
And we took the word and we used the word
as
and started
term.
Using it as a word of a term of endearment.
Yeah.
For us.
Dang.
Those other words have always been words that have been offensive to these particular cultures or
it
whatever.
Has, yeah, yeah.
So you're right. They do use, other races do have these terms that they use, but they use it amongst themselves and they don't say it publicly.
Wow.
We are public with it. You know what I'm saying?
How was that? I was on a golf course. Really.
Yeah.
He said we
I was on a golf course at a country club. I'm talking about an elite country club here in Houston. It's private, you know. Right. It's so private to the point where women can't come on the course at all.
What?
Right.
Okay.
And I was hitting the balls, like I was really kicking butt on the course.
Right.
And an old white man said, man, that nigga can hit that ball.
What?
Right there in my fucking face.
Right in front of your face.
And what hospital?
I was offended. I didn't do nothing. He was already... already shaky, baby.
That's not an excuse.
But you know, I can't hit that man, really. But
what I'm
not exactly sure
what you would have did.
But
yeah,
it would have. I would have had to make contact.
It's a moral, though. It's a moral to that story.
Because you can
really
catch a case on a thought now with all these Karens running around.
I'm saying like something like that.
Boy, that nigga
has
hit
to be
that
contact, bro.
Yeah, not that
has
to be
contact.
Something,
there has to be some contact.
But what ended the story for you? I told him that I was offended, and he apologized, and he said that, you know, Cardi B and my wife loves Cardi B, and they all use the N word on the songs, and I apologize, Brad. I didn't know it was that offensive.
If Cardi B had never been born, he would have still used that word.
Still said, boy, said, yeah. Boy, that just, nigga can hit that
those
ball.
Those are just excuses.
He probably been saying it. And then you know, sometimes they get so comfortable that they forget they around us, and especially if they get to drinking, they'll say some shit and then call you the next morning and upset. Sometimes I'll just say, man, you know, the best way to heal this up, man, is write me a little check, man. Get pulled, you know, $100,000 and we'll just don't let that shit happen again.
Not a
man.
Bad
yeah.
idea.
Give
Not
me a little
bad
money,
idea.
Man.
You, I better make that move.
Yeah,
right
you
there,
papered up, man. Give me a little money, man. I'm trying to start something up, man, so I can give back to the news, man.
Man, yeah. Well, speaking of giving back, I love these segues. Let's go to Naptown, where it all began.
Yes, sir.
And I know that you are doing a lot of stuff in the community, and you do a lot of giving back. I'm always looking up and you seeing you involved in certain charitable events or whatever.
Yeah.
Man, how does someone like Mike Epps,
yeah,
who grew up in Gary, Indiana, where there's few opportunities.
G.I.
Indianapolis, yeah. Indianapolis. I'm from Naptown.
Okay, you from?
I'm from Naptown.
Okay.
But everybody always get it all. You know, it's Indiana.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Yeah, Naptown.
You're from Indianapolis.
Indianapolis.
Well,
yeah.
I know that. I said that.
You said Gary.
I said G.I. You said Gary.
Yeah, he said Gary.
I said G.I.
Because
yeah,
every time
yeah.
I hear Gary, I say G.I.
Yeah, Naptown. Yeah.
Okay, right.
No, that's go all ahead. Good. That's all no, good. I got love
I
for
I think people
whole
get
state.
It, but people get confused sometimes. So it's clear. It's
cool.
Important
yeah, yeah.
To clear
people
it up.
Ask me all the time. I mean, because at the end of the day, when if you're from a state like Indiana, if you in California and you run in, I run into Freddie Gibbs. He's from G.I.
Yeah.
It's like looking at, it's like, it, we done forgot that we 100 miles from each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Up right. the road. Because yeah. we both from Indiana. Like, it don't even matter, you know.
Right. Hey, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
That's where the Klan derived from, right? They from Gary. And, I mean, they're not from Gary. They're from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Mooresville, Indiana.
Is that right? Is it a spooky... vibe up there, like to stay there for like permanently, because I've been there, you know, nice place to visit, but wouldn't want to live there type thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know what? Over the years, it's gotten better because, and I always credit hip hop, because hip hop made that younger generation of Klansmen.
Huh?
They became, yeah, because all of the guys that were Klansmen, believe it or not, their granddaughters are white and they got babies by black people.
Oh, okay. Goddamn.
Yeah.
I'm talking, yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. They just had articles and all kind of stuff up there where this guy disowned his daughter because she went and had, his granddaughter a kid by a black kid.
Mm-hmm.
And her granddaddy was the grand poobah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
You know what I mean? But I mean, it's just like anywhere else, man. You know, you got a section of black people that live amongst each other, and everything else is ruled by that. You know,
Mike Pence,
and they keep reminding you,
Mike Pence, Klansman,
all of that.
He's a Klansman.
I mean, I wouldn't say that he was a Klansman, but in that town, you can tell that there's certain the white people in that town, they move like that. They move like, you know, I don't know a Klansman personally, but you know what it is.
No, you know some Klansmen personally.
No, I'm saying.
They just haven't told you who they are.
That's right. No, they might not know them at all. They just programmed that. Just like sometimes white people look at you like they're programmed to look at you like, what are you doing around here? You know what I mean? They just programmed. It's like all of them are the cops.
I always say that all white people are deputized.
They're self-deputized
to be police officers.
I'm calling the cops.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm calling the cops.
Mike, I still want to get back to like the psychology of you getting out of Gary, Indiana. Indianapolis, Indiana. Yeah. It is a very, very tough, tall task, right?
It is.
How real did you think your chances were? You know, you wanted to be a comedian at what age?
I mean, I was telling jokes before I became a comedian. I didn't know that I was doing it, though. I was just living my regular life. You know, wherever I was at, you know.
Killing them boys in the hood.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm one to admit, I grew up a skinny, light, fair-skinned kid in the ghetto. That ain't easy. You know what I mean? Because you got to fight your way through everything. Yeah. So comedy became a way for me to, I navigated through the hood. I ended up navigating through jail. Wherever I was at, I had a personality that, you know, that lit up the room and I could survive through it.
Right.
You know, so it really was my survival that became an art for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Like, right. But how real did you think your chances were to actually get out of that rut? You've seen so many people that did the exact same thing that came exactly from where you came from.
Yeah.
But you found a way to get out.
Out.
What inspired you, like, really to get out and to make... What made you say, man, I'm going to make it. I got it.
I had an imagination. And I tell kids all the time, if you don't have an imagination, you can't dream. You got to be able to see some shit. Pre-everything.
Okay.
Before everybody, it's got to be in you. And I had an imagination of me being something. You know what I mean? I couldn't figure out what it was. So when I found out it was comedy, I was like, man, I'm on to something. Because I grew up watching kingpins and drug dealers. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, damn, man, I didn't try to sell dope and everything. I cannot become a kingpin for nothing in the world. Like, I'm serious. I was the worst drug dealer in the world. I had everybody in that, all the OG niggas. The only reason why they ain't kill me is because they liked me.
Mm-hmm.
Nigga used to tell me all the time, boy, you better be glad I like you. You know what I mean? Because, nigga, you done ran off with my money. I had a gambling habit, and I was selling dope. I was hustling backwards. You know what I mean? I done shot dice with these niggas and lost my money, the front man's money. So by the time I left Indianapolis, man, I owed a couple niggas money and all kind of shit. I said, I got to go make it at something. You know, I got on a bus in 1991 with... My sister gave me an $85 book of food stamps.
Damn.
You remember them food stamps that was in the book?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Motherfuckers had the
with
green,
the, bell on
the
on
blue
the
fives, and the green
bell,
ones.
Had the bell on it.
Had the bell
yeah.
on it,
yeah.
man.
Yeah.
She gave me some food stamps, and I had $85 in a, and I bought me a bus ticket. And my first baby mom and her aunt lived in Atlanta, and I called her. I said, Janet, you know, every time you come to Indianapolis, you say, you know, if you ever want to move to Atlanta, come to Atlanta. Man, I called her. I said, I'm ready to come to Atlanta. She said, Mike, some things didn't change. I said, what? She said, I'm married now.
Oh, and, Lord.
And, you know, I don't live by myself. Do you know that I told her okay and I still got on the bus? I got on that Greyhound bus, and by the time I got to Chattanooga, Tennessee, at the Greyhound, them niggas that took my car, I swear I'd never forget, I had cross-color jeans and major damage. You remember cross-color? Mm-hmm. All the, man, I had all this gear in my bag. By the time I got to Chattanooga, them niggas that took my, look at that, I said the word.
You see the word?
Yep.
Go ahead, man.
But I forgot, we ain't on the corner. But I said, they had took my bag. Man, when I got, and I ain't gonna lie, I had a 38 that was broke. It was fucked up, and it skipped. And motherfucker shot like it. Click, click, pow! Click, 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 pow! It was the pin. The pin was skipping on them up. By the time I got, and I had a Walkman. By the time I got to Georgia, I called her. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. I said, Janet, I'm in Atlanta. And she said, what? You bullshit. I said, I'm in Atlanta. She said, where you at? I said, I'm at the Greyhound bus station. She said, Mike, I told you I'm married. I can't handle, you know. I said, Janet, I'm going to stay in a Greyhound bus station. But when you get up in the morning, if you come and pick me up and take me to the Salvation Army, I can stay in the Salvation Army. I get a cot. That's how serious I was about being somebody and changing my life. Mm. She said, I'll be there in the morning. She came pick me up. We riding. I had never been out of my hometown other than going to the joint on like in the outside Westville, stuff mm-hmm. like that. When I seen Atlanta and seen all them buildings, I said, damn, you know, it was crazy to see that. It was like a city to me because I had never seen a city like that other than Chicago. That's a lie. I've been to Chicago a million times, but I was in Atlanta. Atlanta was, mm-hmm. I thought Atlanta was Hollywood back in the day. When the Freaknik and them stuff, like, people was moving to Atlanta like they was going down there to blow up.
Mm-hmm.
I moved to Atlanta instead of going to New York or L.A. Man, I seen this city, man, and we was riding, and she said, you know what? I can't take you down there. She said, you can come and stay with me, but you got to stay in the basement. My husband go to work. He works second shift, 3 to 11. You can't come out of the basement till after 3. I'm down in that basement like Anne Frank. You remember how Anne Frank was with them Germans and shit up there hiding in the attic? Man, I'm down in the basement, man.
So he didn't know you was living in the house?
No, he was. Yeah, he was an old G. He was an old player. He worked for the city. Worked for the city of Atlanta, but he was a hustler, too. He was an older dude. You know what I mean? Nope, didn't know that I was staying in that house. I stayed down there for about 20 days. Man, one day he didn't go to work. We were late. I come up out the basement with a bowl of cereal and my drawers on. This old nigga standing there washing dishes, turned around and look, his name was Sidney. He turned around and looked at me and said, nigga, what you doing in my And man, I sit down and talk to him, told him who I was, because he called Janet. Yeah. I said, I'm Janet's nephew. And blah, blah, blah. He called her, right? He called, because she worked for the city, too. He called her at the job. He said, who is this nigga? And she told him, and I sat down and told him. I said, man, I had to leave my hometown. I told him, Mr. Sidney, the streets wasn't for me, man. I caught 3 cases back to back. I caught a dope case and caught a case while I was
on bond.
I caught another case. I said, man, I had to get the fuck up out of that city because they was finna give me the habitual criminal. You know, they got that 3, they call it habitual mm-hmm. up there, 3 strikes. I said, I got to get the fuck up out of here. And I sat down with him and talked to him. I lived with them for a whole year. He got me a job at the city.
Wow.
And I start when that's when I first got to Atlanta, I went to the Uptown Comedy Club. It was in Atlanta on Peachtree Street.
How long did it take you to go there when you got to Atlanta?
The next week. And when I walked in the club, Willie D, nigga, I seen Chris Tucker, Bruce. It was a dude named Chris Chuck. I seen, and them dudes had been on Def Comedy Jam. Mm-hmm. So when I seen them, I'm like, nigga. I thought I was in Hollywood because I seen Chris Tucker. This is the young Chris Tucker. He ain't even did nothing but Def Jam. Don't none of them remember me walking up to him.
Right.
I walked up to every last one of them niggas. Hey, man. And them niggas, hey, man, get back, nigga, back up. You know what I mean? None of them remember that shit, but that's how I made it, man. And I met T.K. Kirkland. He said, homie, you ain't gonna make it in Hollywood unless you move to Hollywood. And I was like, damn. So I'm in the wrong motherfucking spot. He's like, yeah. He said, or you can go to New York and you know, really, really learn how to do stand up, you know, because you still kind of green. Nigga, I got on a bus the next week with $1,500. I had been working at the city and got my text check back.
Yeah.
I had three comics that wanted to go with me. Nigga, I was the only one that got on. I got on a bus again. Went to New York. I ended up living in New York for 10 years.
God damn.
So how, when you got to New York with $1,500, which don't go far anywhere, but especially in New York, how did you make that happen?
Man, I had, T.K. Kirkland had a manager named Dave Kleeman.
Oh, and by the way, shouts out to T.K. Kirkland, the legendary T.K. Kirkland, who was responsible for a whole lot of people getting on and giving people guidance.
Yeah, what's up, T.K.? Yeah.
He got banned back in the day. They said he stole Eddie Murphy's watch and shit. You heard, they said he stole Eddie Murphy's watch. And
I think he said he stole Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. But anyway, they banned him on some bullshit, but... For the most part, he was a solid dude and a nice guy. Put on a lot of young guys, and he had a manager named Dave Kleeman that was a Jewish guy that managed Sandra Bullock and Anthony Michael Hall and all them. He lived in New York, so that's who I was gonna contact when I got there.
Right.
Another, for instance, where I went and just moved somewhere and somebody told me that they ain't tell me to come or nothing.
Right.
But see, in my mind, listen to this, Willie D and Scarface, this is some crazy shit. When I had caught that last case, I caught a case while I was dealing with a case. Uh-huh. I ended up doing 2 years in the county jail and they gave me time to serve on it. I had an A dealing and a C possession. They dropped the dealing because the dude who set me up was a dope fiend. They couldn't find him to get him back in court to testify against me. So I ended up doing time serve on the Class C. Did the 2 years and got out, and that's when I left the town. When I left the town and I got away, in my head, because when I was sitting in the county jail, I said, if they let me out on bond, nigga, I'm going on a run. Mm-hmm. I'd already had it in my mind. And I knew niggas that was federal fugitives before and all that. Them niggas told me stories of how they was running. So I said, nigga, I'm running, nigga. So when I got out and everything worked out, I said, in my mind, I'm going to play like I'm on the run, nigga. And that's how I lived my life. So when I got to you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When I got to Port Authority, I had that $1,500, man. And nigga, I'm in New York, nigga. I'm looking at Port.
You're seeing all the skyscrapers, people everywhere. It's busy, it's moving.
As soon as I walked to Times Square, I ran into a slick nigga that was playing that three-card Molly. He didn't have three-card Molly. Nigga had the
man,
tops.
Don't tell me you gave him some money.
Man, I'm sitting there eating Coney dogs and shit and ran into this slick nigga, that nigga beat me out about $500. I wanted to kill that nigga, man. The little nigga ran. I'll never forget it. He ran. And I couldn't catch him, man. That nigga ran, but it was New York City.
He ran after him?
Yeah, I couldn't catch him. I was running through people and everything. Little bitty motherfucker, Puerto Rican motherfucker. And it was a crowd of people. He let me win one time, and I won. And another girl that he was with walked up and won. I said, this thing got me. But anyway, I ended up living.
So now you're down to a stack. What you do with this stack? How do you get some residence? What happened?
They had on the West Side Highway in New York back in the 90s, late 80s, they had a bunch of row hotels. You know what I mean?
It's called Rogue.
Row hotels. Rogue. And then the hotels, West Side Highway back in the day, it was pimping over there, man. It was prostitutes and transvestite, all kind of shit on that street. It was,
sound like the meatpacking district.
It
man.
Was. Okay. It was the meatpack. That's crazy you said that. That's what it was. Yeah. It was in that area, down in that warehouse area.
Yep.
Where mob is and all that. And they had hotels where you can pay. Man, they had a hotel where you can pay for the hour in the down there. Cause you know they had prostitutes. So I found a hotel where I paid like $35 a day. And, you know, you shared a whole bathroom with everybody in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was some old gangster shit. I mean, you know, you sometimes see needles and all that. I said, man, that's how I knew I was on a mission, man.
Yeah.
And my first baby mama, I had just had my daughter. I told her, man, I'm going to New York to be funny. She said, nigga, you ain't that funny. You just had a daughter, nigga. And you know, and I still tell my older daughter to this day, I said, baby, I hate that I didn't grow up with you, but if I had not have left, I wouldn't know you now.
Cold-blooded.
I wouldn't know you now. I wouldn't have made it. And she don't understand. I can't even trade that shit right now, man.
Yeah.
I can't make her, I can't explain it to her, you know, but man, I end up living in every borough up there. When I got to New York, man, I went to Russell Simmons' office. Them niggas thought, everybody thought I was a maniac. They was like, who the hell is this country? Because I was country, man. You know what I mean? My clothes wasn't, I wasn't dressed like New York. But when I got up there, you know what I mean? Because that's all they was calling. They was saying, country boy, because I was doing comedy stuff. And, you know, the whole time I was up there, I was like, you know what? I know I'm in New York, but I know some shit they don't know. I just always felt that way. You know what I mean?
Because
they was laughing at me. You know, they was there. I said, oh, I know some slick shit. You know, even though it's New York, I was like, they don't know this country shit. You know what I mean? I had bought a Cadillac one time and a girl was laughing at me. I said, what's you laughing? She said, I didn't know you drive a cab. I said, it offended me because. Yeah, because Cadillacs ain't shit up there. They cabs and shit up there. You know, you don't see a nigga with a fixed up Cadillac in New York. Yeah. They don't put trues and bowls, mayonnaise on. You don't even see mayonnaise and mustard in New York. You know what I mean?
Man, you know the first time I saw you, I saw you at Alice Club, Just Joking in Houston.
Oh, Alice.
And you did the Richard Pryor piece. That piece right there, when I saw you do that, I said, he gonna make it.
He
got something.
I remember that at Richmond, on Richmond.
Yeah,
on
right,
Richmond
right. I said, yeah, he gonna make it. He got something. And so this is before Friday, of course, and all of that stuff. And I told I wanted to meet you. And, you know, you saw each other. You like, man, I'm a fan, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm a fan too right now. You know what I'm saying? I'm a fan too, man, because when I saw you on that stage, man, doing your thing like that, I said, man, this dude, he got it. And I seen a lot of people do Richard, but you did it the best. Me to this movie that needs to be made that is still like on the shelf. What's going on with the Richard Pryor movie?
Well, you know what, Willie? Face, you know, I met with Richard Pryor probably about 03, something like that, 04. Went up to his house, met with him, and his wife really is the one that sorted me out, you know, and said that Richard asked me to play his movie. But when I got there to see Richard was like this. Because he had multiple sclerosis. He yeah, he couldn't. He understood us like we sitting here talking.
Yeah.
But all the nerves in his, that's what MS is. He couldn't move nothing. So
he had no motor skills.
But you could read a person's eyes. You know, some of them days, niggas looking at me like, nigga, I don't want to be bothered. Now, nigga, go home. You know what I mean? And the lady didn't understand. I'm like, shit. But
some of them days, so you was around him several days.
Oh, man, I went up there and seen him for a whole year. I used to go sit with Richard Pryor for a year. But it was sad because I didn't get the Richard that I...
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And some days he was like, I would go up there and try to make him laugh when I first met him, and he'd just be looking at me like, that ain't it. You know what I mean? Like, nigga, you got to be yourself with me. You know what I mean? Like, because I didn't understand. I was so mesmerized that it was him. You know what I mean? And then as I got natural and I was regular, it felt like I was just going over my uncle's house. You know what I mean? It was like, damn, yeah, I'm just going to go up to Uncle Richard's house. But we had the maids and shit around there. And then one day, one of the maids walked past and farted. And I said, damn, that sound like it been tampered with. And that nigga said, and his wife said, she came right out the room. She said, you made him laugh. This was like after 6 months, man.
Man, that is nigga a beautiful laughing. Story, man.
You know what I mean? Nigga wasn't laughing, man.
Richard Pryor was funny as hell, bro.
He was funny, man, wasn't he?
I didn't even get my ass whipped for playing Richard Pryor records. That's how funny it was, man.
What was the first album you listened to that Bicentennial Nigga?
I think it was That Nigga's Crazy.
That was the one.
Yeah, I think that was that.
Craps. Remember the Craps?
I remember. How you gonna get a job with a nigga out here pressing license plates?
Yeah, when he was drunk.
Yeah,
license plates.
One of my favorite Richard Pryor jokes was when he talked about him and his wife having a domestic dispute.
And the law came over there.
He shot the car.
He really did.
He bought
that.
Her a car. Yeah. He said, "I bought her a car," and she was talking about leaving. I said, "Well, you ain't leaving in this motherfucker." So he shot the car.
And that's when the police pulled up. And they don't shoot cars.
They shoot
niggas.
Yeah.
Boy, Richard Pryor, man.
And the dog thing. I think he was Richard the first one that I guess he probably wasn't the first one.
His dog like, and
act
the monkey.
Like, act like a dog or whatever. Like, like bring a dog to life with speech. He was like talking about the dog that used to chase him all the time named King. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
He was
that.
like, yeah. He said the dog said, "Yeah, Richard. You know I'm gonna be chasing you.
Yeah.
Tomorrow."
The funny shit was he was running. He was chasing. It's the two dogs chasing after this other dog, and the dog looked at the other and say, "Smell that shit," and he said, "That ain't no goddamn dog. Ain't no dog in the world shit like that, Jack."
Some wino that took a squat on the side.
Hey, man. Richard Pryor was a funny dude, yeah, man.
He was wrong, man.
Bruh, I can't wait to see this shit. I can't wait for you to start, you know, cracking that up, man. Because that you in the role of Richard Pryor?
Well, they doing a 1980s series called Showtime about the L.A. Lakers, about Magic and Norm and all these dudes, and it's coming on HBO. It's going to be real controversial, and they got me playing Richard Pryor.
Oh, yeah?
In it. Yeah,
did you say some words?
Because Richard was hanging around Magic and them back in the day in the 80s.
Right.
When all that, you know, when all the shit was going
Showtime.
On. Showtime. It's called Showtime. Yeah, Untitled.
Yeah.
It's going to be real controversial. Yeah, man. But the great Paul Mooney just died, man.
Right, man, that's cold-blooded.
Yeah. R.I.P. Paul Mooney.
Yeah. Man, that dude was deep, wasn't he, man?
He was, bro.
He was a real one.
Did you know him on a personal level?
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah?
He was real.
Give us a memorable Paul Mooney story that nobody knows but you.
When I first met Paul Mooney, I was at the Laugh Factory in L.A. And I went on stage, and I knew he was in there because they had shouted him out.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on stage, and when I got off stage where he was sitting at, he wasn't there no more. So I thought he left. Because, you know, I was up there trying to show off for him and shit. Yeah. I had the crowd going. I jump off stage. I'm like, damn, this nigga go that quick? You know, because I wanted to see what he thought, but I didn't see him. And I walked outside, and he was standing over there talking to somebody. And I walked past him, and I was about to say something to him, but he was talking, and I didn't say nothing. And as soon as I got a couple steps away from me, he said, "Yeah, you down home funny, nigga." That's what he said to him. "Yeah, you're a down home funny nigga." I was like, "Oh, yeah." I said, "Oh, I appreciate that." You know what I mean? Said, "Yeah, you one of them down home funny niggas." I said, "You know, because I'm country, man." Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm a country boy, man, at heart. You know what I mean? My parents from the South. So that's what he said to me, man, you know. And I never forgot that. And then ever since then, we kicked it and kicked it. When they told me I was playing Richard Pryor, his wife, she didn't want me talking to nobody. Listen, man, when the man died, nobody was at the funeral. Nobody. Let me tell you who was at the funeral. Monique, George Lopez. These are people that don't even know him.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't invite none of his Hollywood friends.
God damn.
So they wasn't there, not because they didn't want to be there. It's just that she didn't invite anybody. Okay. Right.
That's like, God forbid something happened to something to me and my kids. They ain't invited to my shit because my wife won't let them come.
Right.
That's what happened. Man, I'm at the motherfucking service and what's the name of, they didn't even know she was there, Diana Ross. She was sitting in their head with some black
shit on with. She just stood up and started singing in front of the whole church. I swear to God, just stood up and just started. Ah! Motherfuckers was like, they, because we didn't know who she was. Nigga, that was Diana Ross.
Wow.
She snuck in there and started singing. Motherfucker security and the people them had, when they got up on her and realized it was Diana Ross, they backed up off of her.
Damn.
His wife didn't even know that was her. I'm telling you some real shit, man.
And this is the wife that wanted you to play. This is the wife that wanted you to play the role.
Yeah, that's the wife that wanted me to play the role.
And then, wow. And I know you got a break, but I do want you to touch real quick on the Upshaws.
Yeah.
You know, that's a funny series.
I appreciate it.
I like the banter between you and your daughter.
Yeah.
And the exes, you know, and the ex and the new wife and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a beautiful thing. How did that come to be?
Well, you know what? As you know, we all grew up watching the Norman Lear TV shows, Good Times and the Jeffersons and stuff, man. That's our era. That's mm-hmm. the television that raised us.
Okay.
And I've done sitcoms. I've tried. I was on Uncle Buck. I was on ABC and all that stuff. And those outfits weren't for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if I do a sitcom, it's got to be what I'm tailored from, what
right.
I grew up watching.
Right.
That's my timing. That's our timing right there. Fred Sanford and right. That's the comedy
and
we know.
You can see it. You can see it. You're very, very natural in it. I've seen comedians who are very, very good comedians get their own sitcoms, and you're like, you can tell it's forced.
Yeah,
it looks forced.
It does. It does.
But just that Upshaws, you got something now.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's dope. It's dope.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Epps, man, thank you for coming
man,
on the show.
You
definitely got to come back, man, because we got so much more that
man.
We can talk about,
y'all,
man.
Y'all are legends in the game. Again, like I said, man, you brothers raised me. I knew you before you could even begin to think you knew me, man. And thank you for everything y'all have done for the community.
We love you too, man.
Y'all raised black men out here. And y'all don't get y'all just due, man. I hate it, man, because...
No, we good, man. We appreciate it, though.
Y'all
Mike,
deserve
seriously.
More than
nah,
y'all
good,
ever
man.
Have,
Trust
man.
Trust me, man. We're good.
Love y'all brothers,
Love
man.
You, bro. Appreciate
Love you
everything.
Back, man.
All right. Indeed.
Mike Epps, people.
This episode was produced by A-King and brought to you by...
The Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartRadio.